Chapter 3, The Struggle for an Education. One day in the coal mine, I overheard two miners talking about a Virginia school called the Hampton Normal and Agricultural Institute. In the mine's darkness, I noiselessly crept as close as I could to the two men. One told the other that the school had been established for blacks and that poor students could work for their board while learning a trade or profession. As the man continued describing Hampton, I resolved to go there someday. A few months later, I heard about a vacant position in the household of General Lewis Ruffner, the mine's owner. His wife, Viola Ruffner, was a Yankee from Vermont. She had a reputation of being very strict with her servants, especially the boys. Few of them remained with her more than 2 or 3 weeks. I decided that I would rather try the Ruffner house than remain in the coal mine. So my mother applied to Mrs. Ruffner about the vacant position. I was hired at a salary of $5 per month. Mrs. Ruffner wanted everything kept clean, neat, and in good repair. She wanted things done promptly and carefully. And she wanted absolute honesty. I soon went from fearing her to considering her one of my best friends. When she found that she could trust me, she did so completely. During the winter months, she allowed me to go to school for an hour each day, but I did most of my studying at night, sometimes alone, sometimes with someone I hired to teach me. I made a bookcase out of a wooden box and began putting into it every book that I could get my hands on. I called the collection my library. I lived with Mrs. Ruffner about a year and a half. The lessons that I learned in her house were as valuable to me as any education that I have received since. To this day, I never see bits of paper scattered around a house or in the street without wanting to pick them up. I never see a filthy yard that I do not want to clean, an unpainted house that I do not want to paint, or a missing button on a piece of clothing that I do not want to replace. In fall 1872, when I was 16, I decided to go to Hampton. My father had used all of my earnings, except for a few dollars, so I had very little money with which to buy clothes and pay traveling expenses. John helped me all that he could, but that wasn't much because he worked in the coal mine where he earned little, and most of his earnings went toward paying the household expenses. John helped me all that he could, but that wasn't much because he worked in the coal mine where he earned little, and most of his... I was touched by the interest that many older blacks showed in my going to Hampton. They had spent the best days of their lives in slavery and hardly had expected to see a black child attend a boarding school. Some of these older people gave me a nickel or a quarter. Finally, the day of my departure arrived. I started for Hampton with only a small cheap satchel containing a few articles of clothing. At that time, there were no trains connecting the Malden area with eastern Virginia. Trains were only part of the way. The rest of the distance had to be traveled by stagecoach. After traveling over the mountains most of the afternoon, the stagecoach in which I was a passenger stopped, late at night, at an unpainted house that was a hotel. All of my fellow passengers were white. After they had been shown rooms and were getting ready for supper, I shyly presented myself before the man at the desk. I had practically no money. I was hoping to beg any way into the landlord's good graces and obtain some food and lodging, especially because it was cold outside. Without asking whether I had any money, the man at the desk firmly refused to consider giving me food or lodging. This was my first experience as to what my skin color still meant after emancipation. I spent that night outside trying to keep warm by walking around. The distance from Malden to Hampton is about 500 miles. I hadn't been away from home many hours before it became painfully evident that I didn't have enough money to pay stagecoach fare all the way to Hampton. By walking and by begging rides in wagons and carts, after some days I reached Richmond, Virginia, about 82 miles from Hampton. It was late at night. I was tired, hungry, dirty, and completely out of money. I never had been in a larger city before. I knew no one in Richmond and did not know where to go. I asked for lodging at several places, but they all wanted money. Not knowing what else to do, I walked the streets. I passed by many food stands where pieces of fried chicken and half-moon apple pies were piled high. I would have promised all that I expected to possess in the future for one chicken leg or pie. Sometime after midnight, I came across a raised portion of boardwalk sidewalk. I waited a few minutes until I was sure that no passerby could see me. Then I crept under the boardwalk and lay on the ground, with my satchel as a pillow. Nearly all night I could hear the tramp of feet over my head. The next morning I found myself somewhat refreshed, but extremely hungry. As soon as it was light enough for me to see my surroundings, I saw that I was near a large ship that was unloading a cargo of pig iron. I went to the ship and asked the captain, a white man, if I could help unload the iron for some money. He consented. I worked long enough to earn enough money for breakfast, which seemed the best breakfast I had ever eaten. The captain was so pleased with my work that he said I could continue to work for a small amount of pay each day. I worked on the ship for some days, sleeping under the boardwalk each night. When I had saved enough money to reach Hampton, I thanked the captain for his kindness and resumed travel. I reached Hampton with exactly 50 cents. My first sight of the 3-story brick school rewarded me for all that I had suffered in order to reach the place. It seemed the largest, most beautiful building that I had ever seen. I presented myself before the head teacher, Mary Mackey, for assignment to a class. Having been so long without proper food, a bath, and a change of clothing, I did not make a favorable impression on her. For several hours, I lingered around her, trying to impress her with my worthiness, as she admitted other students, but neither accepted nor rejected me. Then she said to me, The adjoining recitation room needs sweeping. Take the broom and sweep it. I swept the recitation room 3 times. Then I got a dusting cloth and dusted it 4 times, every desk, table, and bench, and all the woodwork around the walls. I also moved every piece of furniture and thoroughly cleaned every closet and corner in the room. Then I reported to Mrs. Mackey. She went into the room and inspected the floor and closets. She took her handkerchief and rubbed it over the table, the benches, and the woodwork around the walls. When she was unable to find any dirt or dust, she said, "I guess you will do to enter this institution." The sweeping of that room was my examination, and no young man had ever passed an examination for entrance into Harvard or Yale with greater joy or satisfaction than I passed that exam. Miss Mackey offered me a position as janitor. I gladly accepted. The job would pay for most of my board. I had to care for many rooms and work late into the night. In addition, I had to rise by 4 a.m. to build the fires and have some time to prepare my lessons. Life at Hampton was a constant revelation. Using a toothbrush, bathing in a tub, eating meals at regular hours with a tablecloth and a napkin, all these things were new to me. For some time at Hampton, I owned only 1 pair of socks. I would wear these until they became soiled, then washed them at night and hung them by the fire to dry so that I could wear them again the next morning. The charge for my board at Hampton was $10 a month. I was expected to pay part of this in cash and work out the rest. But aside from a few dollars that John was able to send me once in a while, I had no money. My janitorial work so indispensable that I soon was told that it would cover the full cost of my board. Tuition was $70 a year, far beyond my means. Hampton's principal, General Samuel C. Armstrong, who had been in the Union Army, arranged for me to receive a full scholarship. Because I couldn't afford books, I borrowed them from other students, Clothes were another problem. General Armstrong personally inspected the young men in ranks to see that their clothes were clean. Shoes had to be polished. No grease spots or missing buttons were permitted. To wear one suit of clothes continually at work and in the schoolroom and keep it clean was difficult. Some of the teachers gave me secondhand clothing from barrels sent from the north. These barrels were a blessing to hundreds of poor students. At Hampton, I initially shared a room with 7 other boys because space was at a premium. My bed had 2 sheets, something new in my experience. Puzzled, I slept under both sheets the first night. The second night, I slept on top of both. Finally, by watching the other boys, I realized I was expected to sleep between the two of them. I was one of the youngest students. Most were adults, some as old as 40. Hampton's several hundred students were tremendously earnest. They spent every hour studying or working. Yet some of the students were unable to master the textbooks. It made me sad to watch their struggles. Besides having to wrestle with their books, many of the students were so poor that they had to struggle for life's necessities. Many had elderly parents who were dependent on them. Some were married men who had to support their wives.